This is the story of the trumpet, in the words of those who play it. Young or old, professional or amateur, you've never missed a day of practice, or maybe you're coming back to rediscover the joy you once knew playing your trumpet. For those who love and are fascinated with this crazy instrument that no one can seem to master, or is foolish enough to admit it if they have, this show covers all of the trumpet dynamics. My name is James Newcomb, and I'm excited to bring this episode to you into your earballs. That's a podcasting industry insider term that I just taught you, earballs. I am here in Hanoi, Vietnam. I'm recording this on the 25th of January, 2020. It is the Tet holiday. It coincides with the Chinese New Year, the Lunar New Year. And so things are quite dead. We usually go out for meals and whatnot, and everything is closed. We can't even go out and buy toilet paper. We can't buy bottled water. We just have to wait until stores open up again. And it's rather interesting to be here. But the good thing is that there's none of those crazy scooters on the roads that are making all those beeping noises that drive me crazy. So it's actually kind of nice to have some peace and quiet for once. So let me introduce today's featured guest. Floris Oonstvaater is a up-and-coming. This is a name that you're going to be hearing a lot in the coming years, and I'm just really thrilled to be able to feature him on the podcast here in the, I guess you would say it's the beginning of his career. He's a very young man. He's 26 years old, and already has quite a impressive list of accomplishments. If you check him out on the web at florisoonstvaater.com, that's Oonstvaeder, florisoonstvaeder.com. Check out his bio, his curricula vitae. Very, very impressive young man. And as you're going to hear in the interview, he has a very insightful grasp of music, the role of the trumpet as a musician. You're going to hear a lot about creating that peaceful moment with your audience. And it really begins with you. If you are at peace with yourself, with the music that you're making, then it's just natural that those who are partaking of your art will feel that peace as well. We talk about the soldier's tale, the process of getting commissioned to perform a solo concerto, and much, much more. And if you stick around after the raucous ending to the podcast, I'm going to play Floris performing Debussy's Girl with the Flaxen Hair on piccolo trumpet. And after you hear him describe playing it, you're going to be impressed just to hear his description. But then to actually hear the performance is really, really a special thing. So I'm going to play that after the conclusion where I sign off and everything. Just stick around and you can hear Floris playing The Girl with the Flaxen Hair by Claude Debussy. Again, thank you for pressing play. I'm glad you're here, and let's get on with the program with Floris Oonstvaeter. Floris, here you are on the podcast. I'm glad to have you here.
Hi, James. Good to hear you.
All right. Well, I want to start this this interview with this question. I want you to imagine that I am a musical ignoramus. I don't know the first thing about how to string three notes together. I don't even know how to hold a trumpet. I don't know which end of the trumpet to blow into. And I want you to explain to me in 30 seconds or less what you do.
Well, we all know music. If you know to play trumpet or not, music, I think it's probably the most popular thing on earth. And in these days, everybody's busy running around getting their things together. And to once in a while take a step back and enjoy art or music in my field, which is just a complete moment of complete peace, and your mind will be free of worries and you can drop everything and be in a harmonious moment altogether with the audience in a concert hall. And I'm very happy, lucky, and grateful that I can give those moments of peace sometimes on a good day to the people in the audience. So that's what I do, basically. Yeah.
So if you give the moment of peace to the audience, sometimes the audience has a moment of peace, but the artist is anything but peaceful. They're really stressing out sometimes.
But it should seem still that way. The acting is maybe part of the deal. Uh-huh.
Acting, fake it till you make it sometimes.
Sure. We are very critical of ourselves, of course, most critical of all. So, but if you, Jens Lindemann, as you mentioned before, he taught me once. I met him many, many years ago already for the first time. And then I was playing some concerts and I was playing this Haydn cello concerto. And of course, I was inspired by Sergei Nagryakov, and he plays completely perfect always. So if I made a little mistake somewhere, and then people came after to me after the concert and they said, congratulations, bravo. And then I said, like, yes, thank you, but it was not my best day. Yesterday was better, etc. Jens taught me, Floris, one thing. If people come to you after the concert and congratulate with the performance, just say thank you. You can be critical of yourself, but don't show the others, because they didn't even notice.
Exactly. And to compare yourself to Sergei Nakaryakov.
Which I didn't.
Well, that's just, and it's an unfair comparison, because he is who he is. And like you said, he's flawless. I've seen so many videos of him, and I've never heard any misstep ever in all, probably, I don't know, 100 videos I've seen him.
That plus, it's not that he plays on safe just to hit the notes or something, but he's just a completely musical, phenomenal musical player. And I don't know many trumpet players, if any, who play with such feeling and emotion in the trumpet and timbre and singing thing and phrasing and stuff. He plays like a singer or like a violinist, and that's very uncommon in the trumpet world.
Well, put me in touch, man. We can get him on the podcast sometime.
Yeah, I'm lucky to be a personal friend with him, and he is as he plays the trumpet, let's say, flawless. Yeah, very, very nice person.
All right. Well, I want to, because obviously you're pretty well accomplished at a fairly young age, but I want to go back to like the beginning. What got you started? What got you interested in the trumpet, and why did you choose it as like, this is going to be your career? This is how you're going to make your bones.
I grew up in a musical family. So my mother, she's a professional flutist. She plays beautiful. And my grandfather, her father, he was the trumpet player of the family. And he gave me my first trumpet, which was a piccolo trumpet. I think I told you that before.
Wait, your first trumpet was a piccolo trumpet?
Yeah, correct. Selma G piccolo, yeah. So not piccolo and A, but G, but still it's yeah. He had two trumpets. He had a C trumpet and a piccolo. And first of all, the C trumpet wasn't quite my size, because it was almost as big as myself. It was on my fourth birthday, so I was young still. And the C trumpet, apart from that, he needed himself also, because he was playing in the orchestra. So he said, the piccolo you can have, that's all I can give.
Okay, so that's how you got started. But it's one thing to get started on something, and it's another thing to make it a career. When did you realize this is what you wanted to devote your life to?
This is completely because of other players in the field, like Wynton Marsalis. My granddad gave me, with this piccolo trumpet, he gave me the CD of Wynton with Kathleen Battle.
Oh, I love that one.
I love that one. I was hooked, and I listened to it all day, every day. And for a couple of years in a row, I was just all holidays also. I was just completely playing that CD, and it was for me the most beautiful thing there is still, actually. And I always dreamt of doing something like that, or at least in that direction, and that it turns out that I can do that, the thing that I started as a hobby, now as a profession. This is luck. I'm very, very happy with that also. It's not only luck, of course, it's hard work, but I'm lucky that I'm able to do so.
Do you still have that trumpet that your grandfather gave you?
Of course, I would never sell it. And it's a rare piccolo, because it's a Selmer in G. And I had already 10 people in master classes, all kinds of professors, who said, like, oh, this is an interesting trumpet. How much do you want for it? But No way, sorry.
I met a guy when I lived in Georgia. He was like panhandling, or I should say busking, just one of the suburbs of Atlanta. And he was playing on a G trumpet, or as one of those F G trumpets made by Schilke.
Okay, and, cool. Yeah.
And he's doing pretty well. He'd make $800 in a night just playing like Maurice Andre stuff with like the cello accompaniment. I can't remember exactly what it was, but there he is. He's just going from town to town busking, playing Maurice Andre on a G trumpet. It was pretty cool.
That's fantastic. Well, I think if you sound like Maurice Andre, you would deserve even more.
I don't know if he sounded like Maurice Andre, but he was playing Maurice Andre.
I love this this kind of music, the piccolo playing. Not all trumpet players like it, but I love it. Might have to do with my beginning.
Yeah, obviously. Well, there's that you have that sentimental connection to it.
Yeah, and also just there's such it's such a bright sound, such a happiness in the music itself, like this old music in D, and just the high register piccolo playing. If you can make it sound in a comfortable way, then it's just extremely joyful music. And who doesn't want to be joyful?
Well, I'm no trumpetologist myself, and I'm not like the expert on history. And maybe you can expound on this a little bit, but a lot of the people like Bach, people in the era that where you specialize, the Baroque era, when they wrote for and they used the trumpet, it would just go higher and higher and higher, and almost as though, you know, they were writing in praise to the heavenly beings. Is there any accuracy to that?
Well, how they wrote definitely had to do with the people in their surroundings. So Bach, they had a fantastic trumpet player, and Haydn, he wrote for someone. It's not like these days. You write a concerto and it goes over the world, and people who want to play it now. So it's related to the players they worked with.
So like Bach had one trumpet player that he knew could handle this, and so he wrote it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, you've premiered a couple of concertos in your day, haven't you?
Yeah, not long ago actually. This year I did several, but the biggest one is this year. It was a tour. It was 8 concerts in a row, and this was a new trumpet concerto by the composer from Amsterdam, Tijmen van Tol, which is a coincidence because I met him during my studies in Amsterdam, and we were already friends at the time. So it's very cool to come together again, and it was really a really nice piece. Almost just like 20 something minutes, and with full orchestra. So this was great fun.
Can you pronounce his name again?
His name is Tijmen van Tol. Very Dutch name again. I'll write it to you on WhatsApp.
Because there's a quiz for my listeners after the episode. So
I see. Well, this could be a tricky question. Yeah.
I like your philosophy as to like how trumpet relates to life. And like when you were describing what you do, you're like your elevator pitch. You said that your job is to give people a moment of peace, a moment of happiness. And I'm just going to say it, and I mean no offense, but it's kind of unusual for a young man of your age to have that type of insight. And I just have to assume that it has to do with some of the people like Jens Lindemann, Sergei Nakaryakov, who have been kind of mentors to you. And I just want to pick your brain a little bit about who has been your role models, who has been your mentors, both as trumpet players, as people, as an individual musician. Tell us about your mentors and the impact they've made on you.
Those, I'm definitely not saying they come and go, but you meet new people through time and you get inspired many times. As I said, from the beginning, it was Winton and Sergei Nakaryakov, but Jens Lindemann played a big role in my life as well. I visited him 3 consecutive years in Banff, Canada, where we worked during the brass residence in the Banff Center. This was a summer course. And I met him in Amsterdam during a masterclass. And he was a big influence. I was a young guy at that time, and I really looked up to him.
Yeah, you're a young guy now.
Yeah, imagine.
So
that.
How young were you?
I was, this was 15, 16, 17, those years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
So he knew that, and he made use of that in a very good way, and he really pumped me up for something. But to tell you how I talk like this about a moment of peace, I'm just speaking out of own experience, because when I was listening to people like Jens or like Sergei, like Winton, like my teacher Fritz Damro, who taught me many things over the years, who I studied now also with in Zurich, when I heard them play some incredibly beautiful performances, I realized that I was in, there was nothing there, just this divine moment through the music. And I know that that's a rare thing in the world, to be so captured by one specific thing. And that's the power of music. Art in general, but music is my field.
Okay, so you're a young man. You're sitting, you're listening to someone like Jens Lindemann, Sergei Nakaryakov, mm-hmm. and you found yourself just experiencing that moment of peace,
like you've
just described. And you just said, well, this is what I want to provide other people with what I play.
Which is easier said than done, obviously, but I'm working on it.
Yeah. How do you know when you've achieved that with an audience?
Well, I'm responsible for my things. So how people pick it up, how they experience it, that's their thing. I can just give all of me. And I do that also during the way towards such a concert, in the way of preparation and also on the stage itself. And that's all I can do. And I think that if you are at a certain level, that should be enough. If you experience this yourself, people will feel it and will live it with you. But of course, there's never guarantee, since it's completely subjective and everybody experiences it in its own way. But some things are so beautiful that I can't imagine that anybody would deny the beauty of it.
Like what?
Whew, some music by Bach, some music by all kinds of different composers. I think that if it's available, if it's out there, if people would hear it, they would love it. But this is a little bit the difficult thing sometimes in the classical music world, that people are at first not that interested in it, they think, and you can't blame them, because they're not it's not promoted as much as popular music. But if they decide to come together with their grandmother or whatever, this is actually a joke, to the concert, then they are always impressed, not always, but very often.
So to sum up, if you feel at peace with it, then you just leave it up to the audience to interpret it how they choose to interpret it. If they feel that moment of peace, then great, and if they don't, then so be it.
Of course, it's all you can do. You do what you do, and it's important to do what you do. I think Winter Marsalis taught me that. He says you do what you do. There are always people who try to influence you to do it musically, I'm talking now, to do it in a different way. And if you want to give up some deeply held beliefs musically to please others, this is something we don't really believe in, and because it will not be something truly sincere. And if you bring if you want to touch people in their heart, then you can start with being completely sincere and bring what you feel good with. So do what you do, and the rest is up to them.
So feel the peace inside of yourself, please yourself musically, and others will follow suit. Is there a time where you just know that maybe not the entire audience, but maybe one or two people are impacted by what you've done on the stage?
Yeah, sometimes you feel it completely. It's the energy in the air. And after the last note, you can hear the needle drop. This is such a beautiful moment also, and also a very important moment. You have to cherish such a moment of silence after a beautiful moment like that.
Can you think of a moment like that you can share with us?
Yeah, for example, maybe a while ago, I made this video with the Debussy Girl with the Flaxen Hair. Mm-hmm. And this ends on a very high note. This is an A flat on piccolo trumpet. And it's a very long note, and it it's with a day crescendo, you kind of sing it out. So it dies out and it will be in the air forever. And after such a moment, if you play well and if everything goes well, then this is during concerts a very magical moment. After such a piece, because it's a very people hear also, it's a challenging register you're playing in. And if you can do that in a subtle and beautiful way, then everybody really appreciates it, including myself and the pianist.
So a high A flat, meaning a A flat above the staff on a piccolo?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I have a video of it on my Facebook page.
Oh, man. Share it with me. Send it. Send me the link.
Will do. Yeah.
Something that caught my eye on your little bio here is you played the Soldier's Tale with Maria Milstein. Did I say that correctly?
Yeah. She's famous. You should know it.
Well, I don't. So forgive me.
Well, her grandfather was Nathan Milstein, like one of the world's celebrated violinists back in the time. Friend of Prokofiev and stuff.
How did this come about?
I know Milstein. Maria, she's a fantastic person who takes a lot of initiative in the Netherlands, such as this one. And it's always been a dream of me to play this this piece, because there's such a story behind, and it's with a storyteller also, and this was really really lovely to do. It's on cornet, so mm-hmm. It was the first time for me, and it's not performed so often, so I was happy to get that chance.
Do you like cornet better than trumpet?
Others start with cornet. I start with piccolo, as we know.
Yeah.
I never played much cornet, but I really love it now more and more. I bought a Schilke C cornet not too long ago, and I use it regularly. I really like it. Yeah.
Do you feel that peace when you play the cornet more than you do?
There is a very peaceful side to it, yeah. But you need to practice, otherwise you're having a tricky time.
Okay. Well, my preference is the cornet over the trumpet.
Okay.
So I'm trying to manipulate the conversation in my favor.
Yeah, but I love it. I love it very much, and I've made several recordings also on cornet, which I will send you as well.
Please.
For example, some very lyrical playing by Bach, but also the very technical things like this moto perpetuo. I recorded that on cornet. I've been practicing that for years on trumpet, and I didn't get it to sound quite well. And then I called Winton and I asked him, "How did you do it? How did you sound so smooth and etc." And he says, "Man, you need the Bach cornet." So, okay, I tried and it did sound much better. And then after some months, I dared to record it.
You're a daring fellow. What is the process of getting the gig to premiere a concerto?
Difficult for me to answer. This is all on invitation. The conductor of the orchestra, I played with him before. And it was with a youth orchestra. So they wanted a young person, and we knew each other, and he knew that I would be willing to do such a thing. Also in the trumpet world, I studied in Amsterdam, in Maastricht, and now in Zurich. And it's not common at all to find fellow students who have also, let's say, soloistic ambitions. The main thing they desire is an orchestra job. So that's also what they go for. They go for auditions. They practice their orchestral excerpts and stuff. So in that way, he came to me and asked, "You are the guy to do it. Would you be interested?" Which I, of course, was. And it was a very, very good process with Tijmen van Tol in Amsterdam. I visited him a couple of times to work on the piece. And This was great fun. It started on C trumpet, then some piccolo playing in the middle, and at the end, C trumpet again.
Okay, so the orchestra got commissioned to do this piece, and then they called you.
Correct, correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess you would call yourself a solo, you're a trumpet soloist.
It's what I desire to be, at least. Yeah, I studied until a couple of months ago. I finished now. All that I wanted to do, because I wanted to make sure to be ready for all the chances and opportunities that come to my path, and I'm ready for it now. So I'm really doing as much as I can.
Wait, you studied like what, a degree of some kind?
Yeah, Master of Arts Specialized Solo Performance. That's what I did here in Zurich.
Master of Arts Specializing in Solo Performance.
Correct.
Why did you feel like you needed a degree to feel ready?
It's definitely not about the degree. I don't even, I have it, but it's not necessary. I never show it to people or something. That's more what I mean. I don't use it much, but it's more for the personal development. And to have lessons with Frits Damro. I started with him at the age of 11. I was in young talent class with him in Amsterdam. Then he left some years later to Zurich, and I continued with other teachers. Fantastic time. Theo Wolters, for example, made a big change in my life and a very, very important teacher. But after I finished the study with him, with Theo, I still felt that I needed to continue a little bit more, and the master of 2 years with Frits would be perfect, and it really was. I'm very happy I did it.
What I want to ask is, why do you need the degree? Why can't you just call Frits Damro and say, I want to take lessons for 2 years?
So there is, you're right, there's more to it. And that's the facilities that are offered here in Switzerland, but especially in my school, of course, where I studied. This is the Zurich University of the Arts. This is such a fantastic institute with endless possibilities. They have 5 or 6 beautiful concert halls. They have studios of the highest quality. They have all kinds of different studies going under one roof. And one of them is the Tonmeister sound engineer study. And this allowed me to make many recordings on own initiative, because you could make use of the concert halls, the equipment from the studios, and the students who study this the sound engineer study. So I could work together with them on making some professional, if maybe semi-professional, since we're students, recordings. And I did probably 15 or something in the last 1.5 years. So this is great, and this helped me very much also to learn and to produce some promotional material.
Wow. Well, Floris, you're only 26 years old, so and you've already accomplished so much. What do you see in the next 10, 15 years? What are some of your goals, some of your dreams that you want to accomplish?
This is a nice question, and I would like to do what I always wanted to do, and it's just to sing on my trumpet and play it in a way that I adore as much as I ever did. And where it brings me, I don't know, future will tell, but I get many chances these days in my home country and abroad, and I will take them with both hands and hope to continue a path of being a trumpet soloist, which is a rare thing because there are not so many.
It's funny, before we hit record, we were talking about Chris Colletti, and he said there's really no such thing as a trumpet soloist as a career. Look at Floris Onstvedter. He's proof that there is a career called trumpet performance. And as I just found out today, there's a master's degree in solo performance.
There is. And of course, unsurprisingly, I was the only trumpet player in this study. Yeah. All others from my class, they do orchestra or whatever. Yeah. But so I was between the violinist and the pianist.
So it was just you, a violinist and a pianist?
Violinists and pianists.
Violinists.
There are many of them. Yeah. Yeah.
Violinists, yeah. Plural.
And this is actually a nice thing, a motivating thing, and a rewarding thing. From all the solo master, they choose somebody to play with the school orchestra after graduation as a soloist. And this is quite a big thing in the concert hall here, and a very good, beautiful, full orchestra. And they picked me. I played a couple of months ago with the school orchestra, although everybody, I expected that they would take a pianist or a violinist. So this gives hope for the future trumpet soloists.
Maybe I can have you back on and we can talk more about being a trumpet soloist, because there's a lot of people that they're looking for opportunities, and they could learn a lot from you.
Yeah, it's all about opportunities, and they don't make themselves, especially not on certain instruments. I have a very good friend of mine, Thorvald Jurgis, and he plays the theremin, which is the most uncommon instrument you could think of, with all respect. But he put in the right kind of work, and he's playing all over the world now. So to those people, I listen also to see how they do their things.
All right. Well, Floris Onstvedder is guest. Did I say that right?
Correct. You're getting better.
All right. I love it. And we can find him on the web at florisonstvedder.com. Wow. What a accomplished young man already. Really nice and enjoyable, sometimes entertaining insights were shared on this podcast. So, Floris, until we speak again, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much, James. Thanks for your interest and love for the trumpet. Keep going.
Trumpet Dynamics is produced by Beaten Path Media, LLC. Special thanks to Mike Vax for allowing use of Serenade to a Bus Seat for the show's theme music. To stay in the loop with the growing community of trumpeters who enjoy this podcast, just type trumpetdynamics.com in your browser and you're off to the races. My name is James Newcomb and I'm your host. Thank you for listening and we'll see you next time.